All right, guys, welcome to Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode 39. It is Sunday, March 14th.
Pi Day.
I don't know what that means.
PI 314.
Oh, got it. Yeah, that's neat. What kind of significance does that have?
None. Just, you know, okay. Designated.
You saw it on Facebook.
You could go get a card and, you know, say Happy Pi Day.
Yeah, you can't though, because most of the places are closed. So let's see. Yeah, 12:30 in the afternoon on March 14th, 2021. Daylight savings. What are your thoughts on daylight savings?
I'm happy about it. I wish it was all the time.
Do you think it's necessary?
Well, For my own selfish reasons, yes. I just like it better to be, I like it when it's light in the evenings. Makes my day longer, so I feel like I can do more things.
But it makes it shorter in the winter.
Well, you still have the same amount of daylight. It doesn't
change.
Yeah,
but you probably don't wake up that early.
True, yeah.
I think they should just leave it alone and not mess around, because it's pointless. All right, guys. So we are reliant on your donations to fund our program. So we got another donation from Anthony Burris. He's our most regular donator. So thank you again.
Thank you, Anthony.
That's really generous. We'll still like you even if you don't donate as much, but we will accept everything that you donate.
With gratitude.
Yeah. So value for value, guys. If you are getting any value out of the show, maybe you could give us some donations, subscribe to the show, recommend us to your family and friends who would be receptive to hearing what we're doing. And yeah, we love all the reviews, even the bad ones. We've been getting bad reviews on our YouTube channel. We've been getting a little bit of hate mail and on our Instagram. And that shows me that we're doing a good job. But the vast majority of it is really positive. And there's always going to be, once you get to a certain level, there's always going to be people who aren't capable of creating anything themselves, who are going to try to pull you down to their level. I know, because I've been that guy before. So I try not to do it as much anymore, but yeah, I get it. You know, you are emotionally invested in a podcast and they're not seeing things and doing things that you want them to do exactly how you see it, and you take it personally. I get it. So yeah, thank you. And if you want to offer constructive criticism, that's great too. Yeah. And even the bad stuff, I can pull some stuff out of that too. And maybe try to fix what's bothering you. People are mad at me because they say I have no energy. I have low T. I have a monotone voice. And I'm sorry, guys, this is the way I've talked my whole life. It's the way I'm going to talk for the rest of my life. It's just what I do. And, you know, if you want to listen to a conspiracy podcast where the guest is screaming and yelling and super, super excited animated. About things, yeah, animated and cracking jokes, go listen to Tinfoil Hat. You know, that's the podcast for you. But you can listen to both of them, and we can both offer different perspectives and different ways of delivering the info. So I'm gonna keep it 100% real. I'm gonna say I'm gonna say like a whole bunch, because that's how I talk, and you know, it's hard to break habits and it's hard to podcast. So yeah, like, if you don't like it, fucking go somewhere else. And if you can deal with it, thanks for sticking around. So, yeah, not sorry.
I, I was told by someone I know that I say uh-huh too much as I'm listening.
You don't say uh-huh too much. You sound perfect to me.
All right.
So, yeah. That's the draw to our podcast to everybody else who enjoys it, is that it's 100% real. So we got a podcast from, or not, I said podcast when I meant email. I did it on the last show too. We got an email from, let's see, what's the guy's name? I think it's Rob. Or no, Chris. We got an email from Chris. He lives in Beaverton, Oregon, close to me, out in the suburbs. And he's liking the show. He's red pilling his parents. And yeah, so that's good. We talked, maybe him and I are gonna meet up, or I'm gonna relay the next time I go to some sort of meeting to him and he might join us. Let's see. I got a whole bunch of emails. You looked at them. We got emails that in the title is just thank you, which is really nice to see. So Rob said thank you. He's 4.5 years sober, and he wanted to commend me on my vulnerability on the last show, admitting to problems with alcohol. So he said he needed it on the day that he heard it, and I'm glad that I could help.
That's really awesome.
Mitchell, who's from Georgia, keeps sending me messages about stuff that's going on in Georgia, and that it's a free state, and the company that I work for is building a gigantic facility there, so he wanted to let me know that.
That was very considerate.
Anthony loved the, Anthony who donates to us, loved the Tartaria episode, and yeah, he said he likes it when he hears guests on our show that he's heard on other shows, because he feels like they do a better job explaining stuff, just because they have to explain a little bit more. So that's good.
And I don't know. I think that, I mean, you are way more familiar with all of this information than I am. So it's easy for me to be quiet and listen. It's not always easy, you know, for you to be quiet and listen, but you do it. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm learning just almost as much as you. I know like the basics more than you, but I don't, you know, I know a little bit about a lot, so I'm just taking everything in, and it's just like the more you get it pounded into your head, like eventually is when you can start just reeling stuff off out of your brain. So we've done so many ancient mysteries episodes recently that you're going to be an expert soon. Okay, so I got a really long email from this guy Wyatt, and he lives in Nebraska, and he's really liking the show. He said he grew up in a small town in Nebraska with like 700 people, and he realized that, hold on, let me pause it. My dog's barking.
Okay,
I'm back. So Wyatt sent this long email, and he just talked about how he experienced these really bad floods in Nebraska, and how the government just ruined everything. And we just went back and forth. I told him my opinion that the 9 scariest words that you can hear is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. So he agreed with that, and we just kind of went back and forth a little bit. He had a long email, but he red-pilled his mother and his sister, and they turned into QAnon people. So he said it kind of backfired in like in a way that he didn't want either. So I think what's on everybody's mind is the last episode. What did you think? What stood out to you?
Well, I think that Howdy is just an amazing storyteller. He has a way of getting his information out there. And I mean, it was dramatic information, but he kept his calm, you know? I loved the stuff. I mean, we didn't get into as much of the exhibitions So I look forward to doing that in the future with him. Or,
yeah, I really enjoyed all the other stuff though. I really liked the stuff about the near-death experience and how beneficial having something as traumatic like that in your life is possible. And I think that that is 100% true. I think like if you have this fear of, you know, this irrational fear of death because you've never been close to it, I think that you're going to go through life in fear all the time. And I think that's a terrible way to live. And I think the people that are scared of this virus with the 99.7% chance of survival, I think the people that are scared of it, like really, really scared of it, terrified, people wearing two masks and, you know, that actually are doing it, not just to comply, I think that they've had a life that's been too easy. And I think, you know, I've been so close to death so many times, I have no fear of dying. I don't want to die, but I have no fear of dying. Mm-hmm. The only regret I have in my life right now is that I don't have kids. That's a big one, and I'm working on it. But if I were to die, besides that part, I'm content with the life I've lived. I've led a full life, and I'm only 41 years old. And I think these people that are in their late 60s, 70s, who are, you know, insisting that people, children, and people who haven't had the opportunity to live the life that they've lived, put their lives on hold, like permanent hold, or change it forever to give them an extra couple years, I think that's incredibly selfish. You know, if I could give up my life right now so that a 7-year-old could live the life that I've gotten to live, I would do it, no problem. And I think I don't understand how you could be at a point in your life where you've had kids, had a job, had a career, have grandkids, had a beautiful life, gotten to love people, been married, that you can tell someone that's 16 years old that they don't get to do that. Mm-hmm. That's you know, it's a travesty to me. So in that, what stood out to me in that episode, I mean, I was deeply moved by everything that happened. I watched it again on YouTube. I watched the video of it, and I picked up a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't while we were recording. Emily, my wife, watched it and started crying twice.
She told me that.
Yeah. And, you know, it was good tears. It was like kind of sad tears and kind of hopeful tears at the same time. You know, it was like recounting scary stuff from our past and, you know, being grateful for what we have. But what I took away from it on the exhibition stuff was when he was talking about the human zoos that they had at also, did you see any of the pictures of that?
Of the human zoos? No. No.
Yeah, it's just like these little, it's like the dioramas they have at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City, but with live people. You know, they had like Eskimos and canoes and like little fake igloos. And then, but what stood out to me was like, I was just thinking, oh, they're showing all these like primitive people from other parts of the world. And the fact that it makes, even though maybe they're living a different way, it makes this like Anglo white American way of life look superior. But then he went a layer further and was like, there's no evidence, like there's a chance that they were, that those people weren't living like that. Did you pick that part up?
No, I did not.
Yeah. So think about that. Like
the fact that, stereotypical. Yeah,
that's a construct.
Uh-huh.
And so that really, I hadn't even thought of that, you know? And so when you keep peeling a layer back at a time, eventually you get to a point where you just have to take somebody's word for it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not willing, I don't take anybody's word for it anymore. I don't believe anything. It's all a lie. So, yeah.
what struck me is that, you know, the arrogance of thinking that because they don't dress in, you know, the way that, say, you know, the English coming over to this country and encountering Native Americans, they don't look the way we do, they don't dress the way we do, they don't present the way we do. But who's to say, I mean, they're far more advanced in many areas.
But who's to say that they even did that?
Agreed. But I'm just taking it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the basic way, like, oh, we were wrong because they wore loincloths and had spears and not guns and pants, that they are less than us. But, like, that could all be just fake. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people, once you get into the real Tartaria stuff, that think that Native Americans are black people, and black people were here. Mm-hmm. And there was the slavery narrative has been handed to them to oppress them throughout the years, to give them that trauma of, like, oh, this is what we were, when it wasn't. So, yeah. And then the orphan trains and all that stuff. I got this stat that in 1850, Ireland sent 250,000 orphan children to Australia. So Australia has, like, no history. So they could just send these kids there and tell them whatever they wanted, you know? So, yeah. Okay, so we got a little bit more time. Our guest is in the waiting room, but we'll get him in a couple minutes. So, you excited to have your extremely small barbecue on the 4th of July?
They're saying that's
you didn't see the press call. You got to stay up on current events a little bit so you can participate in the show.
Okay.
CNN. You can get it all off the internet in little clips on Instagram like I do. And watch Joe Biden, mm-hmm. who I don't think is real. I think it's all a deep fake. You can watch him saying that if we all obey the rules, that maybe by the 4th of July, we can have a small barbecue with a few different people. Of course, wearing masks and social distance, but you can maybe have two people over at your house for a little barbecue by the 4th of July. How does that make you feel? 1 year. This is the weekend. I think we were at the 1 year anniversary of 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
How does that make
you feel? What do you think? Do you think the barbecue is going to happen?
No, I don't think it is.
Think they're going to kick the can down the road? Mm-hmm. Do you think people are going to not barbecue on the 4th of July because Joe Biden tells them not to? Do you think people aren't getting together right now?
I know a lot of people are not getting together right now. And I doubt.
In your circles.
In my circles, and in, you know, if the message continues to be the same as it is, nothing's going to change. And the message is not going to change.
A lot of people are getting together, Deborah.
Mm-hmm.
Does that surprise you?
No, I know that they are.
I mean, I can go do jujitsu today if I want to, mm-hmm. and roll around on the ground with other sweaty dudes. How does that make you feel? Do you think that if we look back at, like, the Legal Man or the ATN episodes, do you think Joe Biden has the right to tell you that you can't have a barbecue at your house? Do you think that he should be able to do that?
No, I don't.
Of course you don't. He doesn't have the authority, right?
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Yeah, a lot of people are upset that I don't hold your feet to the fire on more of the freedom stuff because they think that you are in the camp of restricting people's freedoms and liberties.
I'm not at all in that camp.
You were upset though when Texas opened up.
You're right. How do I want to respond to that? I believe that people should be able to do what it is that they want and need to do. I'm not ready to go into like a concert.
But you don't have to. Nobody's saying you have to.
Exact. That's it. So, you know, I don't want to restrict anybody from doing what it is that they want to do.
That's the whole thing with Texas is people were like saying like, come take my mask, or come and take it from me with pictures of a mask. It's like, nobody's saying they're going to come and take it from you. You can wear a mask. You can wear 10 masks for the rest of your life and you can never leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not the government's job to give you money if that happens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we just pumped $1.9 trillion, made it out of thin air, pumped that into the economy. A lot of people are going to get $1,400. A lot of people aren't because they don't meet the requirements now because they make more than $80,000 a year. I think we're going to get it because we're a couple and we make less. But if I was single, I wouldn't get it because I make over $80,000. But so for every $1,400 that a person gets, if you do the math, they're responsible for $5,700 worth of, or $5,400 or $5,700 worth of debt. That's what it all equals out to. That doesn't seem like a good way to do economics, right?
Can you say that in a different way? Because I'm not understanding.
So $1.9 trillion divided by our population.
Okay.
Would be like enough to give us, if you did 57 or 5,400, what it is, plus 1,400, that's mm-hmm. what it is. But they're giving us only 1,400. So that leftover amount, that's the debt that was created by it. And you're passing that on to me, your future grandchildren, their future babies, if, you know, they're not sterilized by then. So yeah, it's not looking good. But yeah, 2 weeks to flatten the curve, Deb.
Yep. Peaks and valleys.
A lot of peaks. You got to make our own, or a lot of valleys. The only hope for peaks these days is to make your own. And, you know, I think it's good that more and more people are waking up. And then I'm making lists of who's not waking up and who's excited to stay asleep. And if it all goes bad, I got that list in my pocket. And I got a lot of stuff in my closet to maybe take care of it.
My God.
Okay, guys, on that note, we are going to pause. And I know the guys that kicked me out at the gas station. I know the people that kicked me out at Safeway. It's all close to my house. Okay, we're going to pause and we're going to let our guest in. All right, guys, we're back and we're here with our guest, Richard Willett. And you know Richard from his podcast, Glitch in the Code, and his appearances on many other shows. And his show's on Iconic, the Iconic Network. And we're really happy to have you here, Richard. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
We're doing well.
Doing fine.
What part of the world are you joining us from?
I'm in England, so I'm on the north coast of England, so kind of like the round bouncy bit at the bottom. So they're right on the coast, right on the sea, literally 2 minutes walk from here. I'm on the seafront, so it's lovely here, very quiet, very quaint, and kind of all the madness it's got here, but it's a bit mad anyway, so you only really notice a slight bit of madness. But we're well away from the cities and well away from all of the real dark madness, so it's lovely here. I'm very lucky.
Yeah, beautiful. So Deborah is my mother-in-law. She's in
California, the Bay Area.
She's like right across the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco in a place called Marin County, California. It's a very elite liberal community.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I am in the suburban outskirts of Portland, Oregon. So we're both kind of right in the midst of it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. I'm glad we had another, we did, we had a Scottish guest on our last episode as well. So okay. He was English, but lives in Scotland, and he helped to interview our last guest. So we've really been branching out, getting to people across the sea, and yeah, we're really happy to have you here. So what can you tell us about your podcast and Iconic and all that stuff?
Yeah, well, Iconic is a new alternative media platform run by Jamie and Gareth Icke and myself, but mainly Jamie. Jamie and Gareth Icke are obviously the sons of David Icke, one of the leading, obviously, names in the conspiracy world. So we started this about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. We kicked off in November of 2019, but we started obviously talking about it. And we wanted to do something. We saw the mass censorship coming. Obviously, we didn't see what was coming and how quick, but we knew it was coming. Obviously, Dave has been chucked off left, right, and center of every platform you can think of, being one of the biggest names. So we thought we need to start something. We need to start a platform. And what we wanted to create was like a Netflix for this sort of content, because there's no industry behind this. There was no way of earning a living doing this stuff. And if you really want to do this stuff well, you need to earn a living. So we wanted to bring the mainstream media production values, which don't need to be as expensive as people seem to think they are, to the alternative media, and create a Netflix type place where you could go and find alternative healing, alternative understandings of the world, some conspiracy stuff, but not all conspiracy stuff, ways of looking at the world. So you have other options. And then we wanted to bring a live element of it as well. So we wanted a weekly live news show. So kind of like tone down Alex Jones, basically, and have that kind of feel. So you combine the subscription based Netflix with also a live streamed news show, which we're launching in a couple of weeks' time. Which Gareth will be hosting. And we wanted, it's a hybrid. So we really wanted to have a place and an industry where people like ourselves could earn a living doing this stuff and keep this information alive, because we could see that future generations were not going to be able to get hold of this information. And never did we think it would be coming this fast. So we started it at the right time. And we launched it in 2019 on November the 5th, fireworks night, bonfire night. And we wanted to make this happen and keep this information alive. And as we all get chucked off YouTube, and we're all getting chucked off of Twitter and banned off everything, we knew they needed a place, but we also needed an infrastructure, a business behind it. And that's what we're trying to create. We're trying to create a way of earning a living and keeping this information going for our kids. I've just had a son. He's 8 months old. And they've just had kids. Thank you. He's wonderful. And they've just had children as well. And we're like, how can we keep this information going for these kids? Because they're not going to know this stuff if it carries on this way. They're not going to have any understanding of what an option is. So we know how important it is for children to have access to the information. So, and my podcast is just one of the ones on there at the moment. And What If is the comedy one we do. So we look at things and we look at the most weird weird moments, things that you would say What If to. I won't say the swear word, what the actual, and we look at them and we frame them in a way of saying, this isn't normal behavior. This is weird. Don't forget that it's weird, and don't let the new normal become normal, because it's insane. And we use comedy to kind of get that across. And that's really popular, because people seem to think they don't feel so much alone that, okay, this is mad. Yes, it's mad. Don't pretend it's not mad. It's mad. So that's what we do at the moment.
I didn't know you did that second one. I'll have to check it out. And yeah, I think that's a good way to do it, because it's so easy to just look at all the double speak and craziness and get extremely angry at it. So if you can reduce it to just laughing at these people for what they are, you know, I think that's helpful, and pointing it out to people, because people are receptive to it once you point it out in a logical way that of how crazy that they're at, you know.
The platform is called Iconic.
Yeah, it's obviously named, it's spelled I-C-K, so Iconic after David Icke. I'm the Iconic name, so obviously Icke. Yeah, it's named Iconic, and we started it. We launched it in November, but we actually started talking about it a few years before that. I knew the guys. I met them at one of David's events. I've been a documentary filmmaker for a good 15 years now, and I started making a documentary with Gareth about the music industry and about his kind of experience of being in the music industry and how he had to actually turn down a lot of endorsements and deals because they wanted him to shun his dad's work and not use his own name. And he refused to do all that stuff. So we started looking into that. And then we just carried on being friends, speaking to each other, doing some filming. And they wanted to do this. And we said, let's just do it. And we started making stuff on a real low budget. And now it's grown massive. And it's got a decent amount of subscribers, paying subscribers. We've got 2 TV studios in the UK now. Massive office. The team's tripled in a year and a half. And this is early days, so we're still early on. I mean, where we'll be in 5 years' time, hopefully it's going to be a industry within itself. So, but it's not just, as I say, it's not just for us guys. It wants to, the stuff that we're doing and you guys are doing, we want a place for people to be able to come find that content because it's incredibly important. And we see it's like a library of Alexandria as well. It's like we need to keep this information flowing. It should be flowing. People should have the option to look at these things, decide for themselves, and they might decide that the mainstream media are right, but they still should have the option to do so. And in the world that's fast coming, they're not going to have that option. And that's not right. That's abuse. That's an abuse of people's human rights to decide how they want to see the world. And that's what we're trying to stand up against. And there's a real David and Goliath kind of feel to it as well. So it's great to be part of it. Yeah.
Well, just floating it out there. Deborah Gets Red Pilled is our free agents and we're on the market. So
perfect. We're always looking for new podcasts as well. We always are. So,
but so let's get into it. So this weekend, I think is the, in America, I don't know if it was worldwide that they said it, but in America a year ago is when they said 2 weeks to flatten the curve. You said that you're inspired to start doing what you're doing with Gareth and Jamie because of what you saw coming down the pike in 2019, even though it wasn't as severe as what's probably going on in reality right now. What were some of the warning signs that you guys saw?
Well, obviously David being chucked off left, right and center, but I've done this sort of research for about 10 years now. So I could see that the doors closing in as it went but because it was obviously gradual. And then in the last, obviously since a year ago, it's become ridiculous. And now it's even more ridiculous than ever. It's absurd. So obviously David was one of the first ones. Alex Jones was chucked off of all the things. And regardless of what you think of Alex, freedom of speech is the freedom of speech. You should never have been chucked off these things. He was given information. I don't agree with everything he says, but I agree with his point of view to say it. And
And it was just the collusion that he was eliminated everywhere from different platforms that were run supposedly independently from each other at the same time. So there was definite collusion between like Twitter, Facebook, wherever else he was gotten rid of from. So
And absolutely, we saw the most recent one with obviously Trump being banned from Twitter and then Parler going down and Amazon taking away Parler's app. And everyone's having problems with these big tech companies because what at the very core of this and what people don't understand, there is a global cult and these are bloodlines. These bloodlines go way back back to Babylon and Mesopotamia, and they, whether they do or not, they believe they do. And that doesn't really matter whether we believe it or not. These very rich families believe that they go all the way back to the Anunnaki. So it's getting off track, but they run these companies. They run these, they fund these companies, the big tech companies, the Twitters, the Googles. Google is a DARPA, ARPA infrastructure. It's a military technology. The internet's military technology. Twitter, Facebook, Silicon Valley, all of these. Instagram, obviously, is owned by Facebook now. WhatsApp, these are all owned by the same companies, the same structure. And above them, you have these very rich and very, very powerful, only because we give them the power, bloodlines. And these bloodlines of are families that most people wouldn't have even heard of, like the Bourbon Two Sicilies and families that behind the Club of Rome and the Vatican. The Rothschilds are one of the families, but they're actually quite far down in the pecking order. So people don't realize there's a very small group of bloodline families that are all interlaced and intermarried that come over from the Middle East and from the Caucasus Mountains. And that's who we're under right now. And that's why they are able to orchestrate everything. And that's why everything's so bizarre. You get the most bizarre things happening. You think, how could that happen? Well, actually, there's been a one world government for a long, long time. It's just not been out in the open. There is a new world order, the changing the order around. But the one world government, I see it as a one world corporation. That's been there for decades, probably at least 100 years in its own infrastructure. people don't realize that it's a cult as well. It's a satanic, pedophilic element to this, these families, that is a cult, and it's cult-like. It's Sabbatean Frankism. And people need to understand that they're not dealing with your Boris Johnsons, your Donald Trumps. You're dealing with a cult that control these people, and they would have never got into the positions they're in without the cult allowing them to. So we're living in a massive global, under a massive global Jonestown, really. And that's why I wanted to write the book, is the, and the book about showing how cults are put together and how this is a cult. And what they're using is this COVID right now is a cult indoctrination process. It's a process to butter people up so they'll accept the Great Reset as if it's for, and it's called, the book's called The Greater Good. So everything that you do is for the greater good. So now your sovereign rights, your individual rights, used to be, okay, that's for me, I decide what's good. Now you've put everybody else in front of you. But when doing so, you're not really taking care of anything at all. So the whole book is about how they've got you to sacrifice your own sovereign rights, repackage them back as privileges that you earn, and that's what's happening. And then that's the Great Reset. You will earn your right to be here on the planet, and that's ridiculous. Who are these people to tell us that? Who's that? These are just people like us. I have no one on this planet that can tell me I have the right. I need to earn the right to be here and earn a living. And neither should anyone else. And these people definitely shouldn't. They've never lived a life like, they've never done a 9-to-5 job. They've never done anything. They've just leached off the rest of us. So there is a cult there. And I want to get that across in the book and in everything I do. But I also want to look at how we can kind of accept that and cope with it and change it. Instead of just going on and on about the conspiracies and the connecting dots, which is great. But then, okay, how are we going to cope? Because the reality is that this is happening and happening fast.
Yeah, we got it. Yeah, so in America, I don't know if you saw it, we just had Joe Biden come out of the basement and give a little speech saying that if we do whatever they tell us to do, maybe by the 4th of July, our Independence Day, we can have a barbecue with a few people at it. So, you know.
Madness.
Yeah, madness, no, I mean, isn't it? Deborah's saying, I told her about it in our intro today, and she said that everybody in her circle would obey that, you know, but everybody in my life and in most of normal American society is like, fuck you. You know, you don't get to tell me who gets to come to my house, how many people can come over and win, and what we can do when we get here, you know? So, I mean, what I've noticed is that the only compliance that the people around me have to do is wear a mask to go get groceries or go to a store where you have to do business to survive. But nobody that I spend time with wears a mask in public, like on the street, like outside, and everybody is like, goes to people's houses and doesn't social distance and doesn't wear a mask and stuff like that. And it's hard for me to like realize that there's people that actually are doing that. So I don't know. What do you think about that, Deborah?
Well, that's the way I live. I mean, I spend a lot of time outdoors because there's nothing else to do. And everybody wears a mask. Everybody wears a mask. The kids wear a mask. The adults wear a mask. Everybody wears a mask. Just walking outside in the neighborhood, on a walking trail, everybody wears a mask.
How do you feel about it?
I don't, honestly, and this is not going to be good, but I don't give it that much thought.
Because you've been conditioned to it, you know?
I think so, yes. Yeah.
So when
you're... it's just not shocking anymore.
When you're out walking the dog, do you wear a mask?
I bring a mask.
You bring one, do you wear one? But you're... So that's like a pretty big stand to take where you live, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do people give you dirty looks?
Yeah, I definitely get the side eye.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I go to it's not that, I mean, there's people in my area that do it, but if I go to downtown Portland, the homeless people are wearing two masks. And, you know, the only people in downtown Portland are double mask homeless people and the people that work at Starbucks. Like everything else is boarded up. And, you know, I was working down there a couple of weeks ago and I was walking around without a mask and people were looking at me. I just smile and give them, you know, try to make them remember how nice it was to see somebody's face. It's a bummer for them that it has to be my face, but you know, yeah. So, what's been the process for writing the book, Richard?
I've written a few books before, but never released them because I just thought I was trying to, the scope of it was all over the place. So the process of writing the book is kind of, it's an extension from the film I made last year, was Prime for Panic. So I wanted to show how people were being set up for something and crushed down. And they're not holding their ground. And what you guys are saying is incredible to me. It's because it's different here. People are wearing masks in the shops. I've not worn a mask and I won't wear a mask. But that's an individual thing. I have no problem with them doing it as long as they leave me alone.
Yep.
But they're not wearing them in the streets so much. You get the odd one here and there. They're wearing them on public transport. I've refused to wear one as well. I will refuse to wear one consistently because it's a sovereign thing for me. I won't allow that to go that far. But also I see it as a kind of a hardening of myself. Because at times in my life, I've gone with things that I just thought, this is nonsense, this is mad. I've always been able to see people, things as mental when they're mental. But sometimes in my 20s, I went with them. I will no longer do that. And I especially won't do that when I know that the long-term effect on the kids down the long road is going to be, I will not have my son wear a mask. No chance, ever. Until he's 16 and he can decide for himself. But right. If that's still going, then we're in some deep shit, to be honest. Because he's 8 months old. It's... I know where this is heading and I know who's behind it. Most people don't. And that's what I find difficult. So I wanted to write the book to show people that actually you're being abused here. It's no different from you being in a abusive relationship. I was in a relationship with someone who had borderline personality disorder. And I had to learn everything about borderline personality disorders, which is a cluster B personality disorder, which is in there with narcissism, histrionic. It borders all the main psychopathic ones. They bounce around from that. And I knew that what was happening here was the same psychopathy and of abuse. And that's what happens in cults. It's the same psychopathy of abuse. They abuse you in the same way. This is a process of abuse for a global population. And you are being abused systematically and broken down over time by a very small percentage of what people on this groups on this planet. And I didn't want people to be abused. I don't like bullies. I hate bullies. And I just think you're bullying people. And also, there's no informed consent. People don't know what's going on. They don't know what the outcome is. They don't know where this is leading. They don't know what these little things are. They're putting the mask on, is sending your kids to school with the mask on, 2 PCR tests a day. That PCR test should never have been used for this anyway. Carrie Mullis, the inventor of the PCR test, said this is not a test for diagnosing infectious diseases. It's a test to show if you've got a tiny fraction of genetic material in your system, that's all it can tell you. And then the more you cycle it up, it's basically just like blowing up a big picture. It doesn't mean that you've had a tiny bit in you. It's going to affect you in any way, shape or form. So the test is useless. And he also came out and said that Dr. Fauci is an absolute fraud and shouldn't be in the position that he is in and actually shouldn't be trusted because he has a nefarious agenda. Now, people don't know these things. If you knew these things, you wouldn't do these things to yourself and you certainly wouldn't put them on other people. So what I see is a massive, it's a massive indoctrination process into a cult. And you've got this cult here now that have got these woke lot, this woke left lot, the Biden lot, that's a cult. And then over the right, you've got the Trump lot, which is Q lot, which is also a cult. And somewhere in the middle, you've got people going, this is just mental. Most people are going to go along with it for an easy life. It's not an easy... But is this a life? This isn't a life. Why am I asking for anybody to stay in my house? Who the hell do you think you are to tell me you want me to pay my mortgage and then tell me I can come? No chance. And it used to be 30 years ago that you would never put up with that. The things that people put up with nowadays are absolutely insane because they've been broken down by an abusive system and an abuser. You're being abused. That's why it feels like shit. You're being abused. That's why, and you need to stand up for it individually, just for you, sovereign. So I want people to kind of look at it and go, does this benefit you? Oh, well, you're worrying about the greater good. You're worrying about upsetting. No, if you've got a woman who's 30, 40 stone in a mobility scooter with a face mask on, she's ill because she hasn't looked after herself. not because of you've not got a mask on. You're not responsible for other people's health. You're responsible for your own health. That's it. That's it. You can't be responsible for everyone else, and they shouldn't be responsible for you either. And this is what Satanism does, satanic anything. And it's a satanic cult. It flips things around. So now you're not responsible for your own behavior and your own health, but you're responsible for everybody else's health. That's never going to end. That won't end. It can't end because it's insane. It's inverted sanity. And this is what I'm trying to point out, is that this has been done to you on purpose over 12 months. We had the same thing here that you mentioned earlier, 3 months to flatten the curve. I was in a hotel in Derby about to film, and I was shooting a film, a series with a guy called Richard Grannon, who's a Spartan life coach, and he's great, and he does psychology. And I didn't believe a year later, and I was just come back from there, I'd be in the same hotel, and my window would be screwed shut to stop COVID getting in. What are you talking about? You're mental. You're absolutely mental. And I don't want kids to grow up not seeing things as mental. And it reminds me of that story, the Emperor's New Clothes. Yep. It's mental. Stop it. And we're all looking at each other going, it's mental, isn't it? We're going, yeah, it's mental. And even the ones with masks on are going, a bit mental, isn't it? But they're putting the mask on. Stop it then. Just stop it. You're not going to get everybody to stop it. But someone's got to come along and go, the Emperor's naked. And he's an arsehole. And stop it. And that's why I'm passionate about. You're being abused. Stop going along with your own abuse. They've closed your business down. They put masks on your kids. They're anal swabbing kids in China. They're putting masks on your kids at school. They're letting your kids earn. They're making your kids earn breathing breaks from masks. You're getting two flat PCR tests on a kid each week. A PCR test that isn't suitable and doesn't do anything, so they can make the numbers up as they go. What are you doing? What are you doing? And it breaks my heart that kids should be, I think, their parents should step in and go, that's bollocks. We're not doing that to my kid. No, I don't care. I don't care. I'm the last person on earth. You are not putting a mask on my kid, and you are not swabbing my kid every 2 weeks. Piss off. There's none of that now. And we need that backbone back. And this whole indoctrination period has just weakened people, weakened people's will. And that's what it does. But only reason why I think I'm like this, and because we know who's behind it, we know where it's heading. But I don't think people understand. I don't know what you guys think. I don't think they know they're being abused. I don't think they get it.
Yeah, I think. Do you think it's because it's the whole frog in the pot, just turning the heat up a little at a time, that it goes unnoticed? Or my main question that's sprung up, where this is our 39th episode of the show. And my main question that sprung up since we've been doing it, that kind of comes up over and over again, is why am I awake to what's happening? And, or even if I'm, you know, I could be 100% wrong, but why am I open to looking at every side of it? And some people you thought were intelligent, smart, free thinkers before, you know, this really exposed them, aren't.
It's a good question. Yeah, no, it's a good question, because I know people that actually sit there and tell me that they know the vaccine's probably dangerous and experimental, and still within its 3-year testing period, and the fact that it's never been tested on humans before, skipped animal testing, which I don't agree with anyway, and it's an experimental mRNA fake vaccine, and it's a synthetic code. They'll know all that stuff and still go and get it, because I think they're scared and they want an easy life. And I think that we've been brought up, as soon as we're born, we look to the government, tell us what to do. We look to mum and dad, tell us what to do. Look to our teachers, tell us what to do. Boss, tell us what to do. And without being told what to do, I don't think people know what to do with themselves. Just tell me what to do with my life. No, go and figure it out yourself. Go and find your own way. It is the fact that they're looking for an outside source to to make themselves feel like they're actually a person. So they have to have someone looking back to them and letting them know that they exist, instead of going out and showing the world that they exist. It's all coming from outside sources inwards. Social media hasn't helped with that either, with kids especially. So it's all about, tell me what to do in my life. So what are the rules? You lay the foundations for me. You give me the structure. Well, actually, no. You've got to build your own structure. And look what they do. If you go to the government and you ask them about lockdown, they're always going to give, you're always asking them for permission. to do something with your life. Give me an answer. Give me the options. Give me these options. Oh, I don't like that option, but come with another option. They're going to come with shitty options because they're not nice people.
Yeah. So
don't
Deborah,
ask them for options.
Deborah, do you feel like you want to be told what to do?
Yeah. I mean, I felt, well, it's the way I was raised.
I was raised that way too. And I can't think of a more horrible thing in the world than another grown up telling me how to live my life. Why do you think it's different?
Because I'm not looking as much at the big picture. If I'm speaking to the big picture, no, I don't want somebody to tell me what I am and what I'm not allowed to do. But in terms of, you know, living in a society with, I don't know. That's a hard one. I haven't been a critical thinker all my life. I haven't. I just haven't.
Do you think it's because you didn't want to know the horrors that maybe you knew in the back of your head that were looming there? Or do you think you just didn't have time? You had kids, you're a full-time mom, you got other stuff to do.
I didn't know about the horrors.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the horrors were the wars that were fought. Those were the horrors. But I didn't dream that there was all this, you know, backdoor maneuvering and carrying on. I you know, this is all new to me.
And like they were kind of successful with creating the left-right bipartisan paradigm to kind of indoctrinate you into there's evils going on, but it's not from my side.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Since we've been doing this, how do you feel about being told what to do?
Well, you know, I have to give it more thought now. You know, you can't unlearn what you learn, and
you can unlearn what you learn.
Well, let me rephrase it. When you're shown truth, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't ignore it.
Yeah.
It's just a very uncomfortable place to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it like you finding out both your parents are abusive, and then you're going, okay, now I have no parents, and that's why I think a lot of people go like, who's taking care of me? And then I think that I kind of got to the point a long time ago where I just think, I don't give a shit, I'll take care of me, that's fine. But I understand.
Even more
people
that,
don't.
Even more than that. Sorry for interrupting you, Richard.
No,
but even more than that, if you're raised with abusive parents, that's normal. That's your normal. So it doesn't seem abusive because that's your normal.
Absolutely. I get that completely. I was raised with, you know, an abusive household. They're abusive to each other, not myself, but I get that. I totally get that. And I think people need to realize that how they rely on other people so much. And also, you said something really earlier, Deborah, that was really important. You said, I didn't want to face the way the world is. And I think none of us, we don't want to face that. Oh, my God, this world actually isn't a very nice. The world is. People are in general. But the structure of it is quite horrific. You're looking at things like Prince Andrew, who's friends with child trafficking paedophiles, and Prince Charles in England, who's best friends with Jimmy Savile, who was sexually abusing handicapped kids.
Yeah, we've got Oprah Winfrey,
Oprah Winfrey, who's hanging around with Dave Geffen and all of those, like doing dodgy stuff.
John of God, Jeffrey Epstein, Harvey Weinstein, all great, great friends of her.
Absolutely, she's horrific. She's one of the worst ones, and how she's getting away with anything at the moment, I don't know. She's horrific, and I've been following her for a long, long time since she went after Michael Jackson in the early 90s, and so did Weinstein. And the horrors of actually the way this structure is hard to come to terms with because it feels so overwhelming. And then you think, well, where am I? What am I doing? And how? And what happens? But look at the state we're in. I mean, no one knows what's going on anyway. No one knows what they're doing from week to week. What more of an abusive situation do you need to be in that you do not know what's going to happen to you from week to week? And you know that they could turn it on a dime whenever they want. Why are we listening? That's my biggest problem. And when are we going to get to the point? It's different, seems to be even different. I think we forget in the UK how big the US is. So you guys in the UK, it happens in the UK. Like in England, it happens in England, all of England. Whereas you guys, it's quite different by what you're telling me. So in here, in England, we're like, we all turn, it's done. Like, it only needs to be a small, like 40,000, 50,000 of us in the UK that just decide to open the shops up, then it's done here, completely done. But it's different for you guys. It's like you having different countries. I can see it's quite different. And I think people in the UK need to understand that it's actually not the same where you guys are. It is here. It's not as simple as stand up, go out. It's so such a vast country.
Yeah, and all the different states' rights. And, you know, even with what I've heard about Texas so far, since they've lifted all the mandates and all the opened up 100%, somebody, you know, on another, I listen to a lot of like liberty-minded freedom podcasts too. That's kind of what got me red-pilled and down the rabbit hole was freedom before I looked into like all the really dark stuff. But somebody said that they had, in Texas, they still had to call, they didn't want to wear a mask when they went to the grocery store. They had to call 10 different stores and finally find some small independent like health food store that said, you know, masks aren't required.
That's just insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the fact that we're even having to talk like this, that's insane as well. Like, we're talking like it's something we should even be having to deal with. I'm not even at that. I don't want to get to that point where we go, oh, it's just something that we have to. No, it's not going to happen. It's not something we have to deal with. This is not right. This is not something you just have to deal with. You don't have to deal with abuse just because that's the way it is. No, these people are abusive. They need to go. And I think we need to get to that point, sovereign, individually, in ourselves, going, no, that's wrong. We have a thing called common sense. You can't explain it. You just feel it.
Not everybody has that anymore, though, man. It's been worked out of us.
You're right. And it has. And that's what frightens me for
government
kids.
Government schools, man.
Kids aren't going to have common sense. They're not going to. And you can see it going already. And I'm only 40, but you can see what's happened even 15 years younger than myself now. They don't have common sense. They just don't know when they're being abused. They don't know when something is weird. It's almost like a slight autism to it. It's like it's a detachment, which I'd assume social media's done a lot of this. It's almost you don't understand how you're coming across, do you? And that's what people look some like. You're like, you know, maybe you meet someone, you go, did they just say that? They've got no feeling in there of when to say things, when not to say things, when things are funny. There's no humanity. There's none of that unspoken language. And if you do this and take people's that way, what happens? That's 90% of your communication gone here. Because even if you smile without the mouth, the smile doesn't reach the eyes properly. You can't smile with your eyes. And that's what they've done this on purpose.
Yeah.
It's all making children almost autistic.
Yeah. They're just in a, like, I know it's how it is for me. I'm in a state of constant unease because I can't tell what's going on with people, you know, like I can't tell their expressions. I know how to read people's expressions because I came from a time when you could still see people's faces, but I don't know. I'm working at a high school right now. I'm a construction worker and the school's in session. It's a kindergarten through all the way through high school, 12th grade, you know, 18 years old here. It's an Episcopal school, real high end Episcopal school. And there's kids out on the soccer pitch all day for gym class in masks. But what gets me is the high school kids have a shortened day. I think they show up at like noon when I'm taking lunch and they're all wearing masks, even outside. And it's just like, geez, man, when I was 16 years old, like if it had been forced upon me, I wouldn't.
Rebellion.
I was a punk rocker and all that stuff growing up. But I think just normal kids from my time would have rebelled against it. And now it seems, you know, it's gotten into the point where it's not a big deal to anybody. And it seems like these kids have no balls. There's like nothing to them. It's kind of a bummer.
It seems like they're just so elated that the school is open for them that they're willing to do whatever is required to go because they've been so isolated.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird watching kids at soccer practice wearing masks, you know, so.
And how ludicrous is that? How dangerous is that? I mean, you don't have to have an IQ of over 10 to realize that putting a mask on a child while they're running around. It's dangerous.
Yeah,
it's not fucking rocket science. Stop doing it.
I saw the cross country team like running through the neighborhood while I was leaving work, like a group of 10 kids running.
I don't know. I mean, we shouldn't even have to be talking about these things because it's so beyond stupid and insane. It is evil. They're suffocating kids. They're suffocating everyone. It's slow genocide. And we know the likes of Bill Gates loves his, he comes from a eugenics cult. It's a cult. People, you are being abused on a monumental scale. And not only that, you're allowing your kids to be abused. When I was a kid, I got pinned up against the wall by my school teacher, by the neck. My dad went down there and picked him up and threw him around and pinned him up against the school by his neck.
Good.
That's what happened when you were kids. And that's only like the late 80s. That's what happened. You touch a kid, you get beat. If you put a mask on my child, you're going to get the same. You're going to get the same because that's wrong. You don't abuse my child. I don't care what mandates they... I don't care what some fat guy in the Houses of Parliament that hangs around with paedophiles tells you that is the law. You are putting a mask on my child and that ain't going to happen. Now, what happened to those parents? That's mental. That's mental. There is a level where I thought it would stop and I thought masks on kids hopefully would be the one to stop. But they're getting... They're giving experimental vaccines to people. Where does it stop? Where does this mentalness stop? And that's like the whole point in the book is that you have been turned into a zombie saying yes to things that you would have said no to 15 months ago. How quick have you been brainwashed into this? And then when the Great Reset comes in, when the digital money comes in, when they're all bloody 5Gs everywhere, you are going to accept it because you'll have no oomph about you. The only God-given grace is that people like myself and my generation and your generation are still alive to turn around and go, actually, this wasn't the way the world was, because that's mental. That's not going to happen. But if we don't do this now and keep this information going, that will be the way things are. There's a thing called the Overton window. The Overton window is basically a graph. It goes like this, and you scritch it across. It goes across that way and that way. And in what that between those two points is what normal is. So what they're doing is shifting the Overton window across. So by the time we're too old, I'm gone, that Overton window would be so far over there, it wouldn't even been on our scale.
Yeah, I call that.
And moving, I don't want that to be over there.
Moving the goalposts.
Pretty much, yeah. And these are all psychological like things that I put in the book and show models for, because the Overton window is how they push it across. It's just nudging it. It's called problem reaction solution, David calls it, which is Hegelian dialectic. It's just so easy to see once you know this stuff. And that's why this stuff is so important for people to understand. It's not about conspiracies. It's about abuse.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Conspiracies are people conspire to abuse. There's conspiracies happen every day. There wouldn't be police detectives if there wasn't conspiracies. It just takes two people to do something that you don't want them to do to conspire to do it. It's of course conspiracies. The world is a conspiracy, but it's not about the conspiracies, people. It's about abuse. And abusing decent human beings. And that's what hopefully deep like conspiracy theorists are trying to do. Maybe many of them don't understand that, but what you're trying to do is actually stop people that you love being abused. And that's all we're trying to really do. Don't abuse my children. Yeah. Don't abuse my friends. Don't abuse me. Piss off. Yeah. Who do you think you are?
The more abuse that people are willing to submit to is makes it that much easier to rule us. That's kind of what it breaks down to. Can you get into the Bitterman's stuff for us?
Yeah, the Bitterman's chart of coercion.
V or B?
It's B, so it's Bidder, B-I-D-E-R, Mann's, Bitterman's chart of coercion. And I just need to get it up on the screen because my eyesight isn't as good as it used to be. So okay. Bitterman's chart of coercion is a tool developed to explain the methods used to break the will or brainwash a prisoner of war. Domestic violence experts believe that batterers use the same techniques. So exactly what I'm saying here, cults use the same techniques. So this is a list of how they break you down. And Gareth Icke actually showed me this when we were doing a podcast together. And I was, especially when it got to the end, how this just outlines. So guys, when you listen to this, these points, think about the last 12 months and how you've been abused and what's happened to you. So the first method
what we're
they
going
use,
through, can we kind of relate it to what we've seen or what's happening right now?
Yeah, that'd be pretty Deborah, obvious,
like,
but I would
come up with an example for like each step or something.
Yeah, of course. So the first method they use, which is isolation. I don't really need to go into that too much. You've been locked in your house for 12 months. You can't see your friends and family. And when you do, they're going to try and tell you who you can have around, when and where. Isolation is the first one. So it deprives the victim of social support and their ability to resist. Well, there you go. The second one is...
family, you're relying on the state solely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's the first one, isolation. So the second one is control or distortion of perception. Now, this is where the deletion of like work that we're doing, the podcast we're doing, the alternative narrative is going. So we had a thing in the UK. It was a kind of chart put together by thousands of doctors and thousands of medical professionals called the Great Barrington Declaration. And it was thousands, hundreds of thousands of scientists, the people that the mainstream media would tell you to listen to, but they're telling you not to listen to these ones. And these ones were against the lockdowns and against the vaccines, but mostly the lockdowns, and telling them how bad they were and how much harm they were going to cause. So they were deleting that perception from the mainstream media. We know the cult owns the mainstream media channels. So they'll delete that perception to give the person that's being abused the perception of the world that they're not being abused. And also there's no other options. It's just the way that it is. So it fixes attention upon immediate predicament. So, and followers... fosters introspection. So immediate predicament. All you've heard for the last year is COVID. It, with a little bit of breaking up of a bit of Joe Biden and Trump in there, and a little bit of what we've got going over here with the Queen and all that madness, just for distraction. But it's just your perception has been fixed on COVID for a whole year. Everything's COVID. It's just bus stops. Every time you go to the train station, every time you turn on the telly, we have some ridiculous NHS, actually quite disgusting NHS adverts here, telling you not to do this, telling you to do that. It's abuse. So that second one is control of your perception, and that's by getting rid of any other information, which is what we're facing at the moment. So the third one is humiliation or degradation. Now, humiliation, anal swabs, exactly. How humiliating is it? They're taking the piss and the poo from you. It's ridiculous. And they are putting masks on you. That's humiliating. They're masking you. They're telling you need to stay in your home. You can't have, they're telling you what, they're treating you like a 12-year-old. I think it was even Hitler that said, treat them like a 12-year-old or 11-year-old for a year. And eventually they'll start to act like 11 years old. And they have, most people have, because they believe themselves to be little children that need to be told what to do, and that's broken them down. So they've been humiliated into this. People have. And when you go out, you're not wearing a mask for me, you wear it for my safety. What are you doing for me? I always tell people, if people tell you that, take a mask out of your pocket and put two over them. So you're doubled now, aren't you? So you're wearing mine for me. But yeah, it's like you have to take the mickey out of this because it's so insane. So the next one is threats. If you do, you break this, you go to jail. You'll get a fine. You'll get a criminal record. Threats. You'll get the COVID and pass it on and kill granny. That's what we've had in the UK. You'll kill granny. We've had kids going home crying because they think they're going to kill their granny with a thing that they can't even get. Children don't get this. It's utterly insane. So this, you're not just threatening them. You're threatening that they're going to accidentally hurt someone they love. How sick are these people? Do you know what I mean? It's not the bubonic plague. I don't know anyone who's even had this in a year. I certainly don't know anyone who died from it. And even if you did, the test wouldn't be able to tell you that anyway. So it's utterly insane. So the threats is the next one. You're going to kill someone you love. And if you don't, you'll get fined for breaking the laws or the rules. They call them rules. What am I, 10? It's ridiculous. The next one is demonstrating omnipotence or superiority of power. Well, that's by letting you out for a little bit and then pulling it back. Shut your business. Do as you're told. It's ridiculous. It's like, who are you in charge? Oh, well, we're the government. I really genuinely don't care what you think you are. You're a buffoon who's never done a proper job in your life. But people put them up on a pedestal again. And it's like, why? Why? They're just human beings. They were in a nappy one day. They were cognitively not, they're not capable of telling you, why are you putting yourself down here and them up there? Because you've been taught that you're down here and they're up there. Well, no, thank you. Who do you think pays their wage? Your taxes do.
Yeah.
You pay to be abused, people. Yeah. And this is what people, you're paying for your own abuse. people say in the UK, oh, if you don't get your vaccine, you shouldn't have any NHS treatment. Okay, I just won't pay for my national insurance bill at the end of the year, which is a hell of a lot of money, and I'll buy private.
I think that's
you can't do that. And you're like, well, you can.
Yeah, I can see that happening here. I'm in a trade union, and I have you know, Cadillac benefits. I've got good stuff, but I could see it happening in the future if they say, okay, you don't have to get vaccinated, but you can't go to job sites if you're not vaccinated. And if you're not vaccinated, you're a health risk, and we're not going to pay. We're going to cut off your insurance because of that. I can totally see that happening.
Absolutely. And that's a threat. Again, that's a threat, isn't it? That's behavioral modification. These are threats. This is a slow psychological. In the UK, the people that are running this are psychologists from Imperial College. They're not medical doctors.
Yeah.
They're psychologists. This is a psychological warfare. People don't understand.
Did you know that, Deborah?
No.
Yeah,
it's psychology.
I can see them having a couple psychologists, just because all this is a rough time. You know, we should have some state psychologists on board, just to, you know, help out and give people, you know, ways to cope with this. But no, the majority of the people they're calling doctors that are coming up with all this policy are psychologists, Deborah.
It's abuse. And I'll tell you what, one thing that really sticks out with me. The person I told you about earlier that abused me in an abusive relationship with borderline personality disorder is now a psychologist, by the way. It's fucking mental. She's got an honours degree in psychology. So you can, do whatever you like with that. But that's how mad the world is right now. I'm not going to have anyone tell me that the way I should be thinking. Certainly not. And don't care what little certificate you got. Absolutely not. I know what's wrong and what's right. And that's wrong. And these people are doing this. They're working their way down this Biderman's chart of coercion. So the next one is enforcing trivial demands, which was my favorite one, if they can call that. Enforcing trivial demands. What stupid things in the last year have you had to do? I've had to wait outside the shop in the pissing rain in case I got a cold from someone. I've had to wear a mask. I've had to go the same way round around a supermarket. So we wouldn't accidentally walk like that.
Walk to your dinner table at the restaurant wearing a mask, but then you get to take it off to eat. But then when you have to go take a piss, you got to put it back on, you know?
Perfect. Because it's fucking insane. And it's supposed to be insane. So you're doing stupid things. You know, I got there, my partner was still pregnant at the time, and they made us try and stand in a box. But it wasn't a box, it was a bit of tape around. So what do you think COVID's going to go? Hang on a minute, I'm not going anywhere now. There's some tape down there. Stop it. Stop doing stupid stuff. They're laughing at you. And this is the point. It breaks your will down. When you go along with something you know is stupid and you do it anyway, the next, your whole sense of sovereign being goes down. Like, I know that's dumb, but no, it's dumb. Don't do it. It's dumb. You know it's dumb. Don't do it. For you, don't worry about what they're doing. They're going to do it. If they're going to do it. But for you as a person, stop doing dumb shit. If you know it's dumb, you're not 12. And so this is enforcing trivial demands. So it says demands are often trivial, contradictory, and non-achievable. Now that's the big one, the non-achievable. Zero COVID.
Yeah.
Non-achievable. Never going to happen. Don't be ridiculous.
Yeah. So what happened in New Zealand, like what you guys were talking about on your podcast with Dr. Robin, is that New Zealand was doing okay. They were kind of open like everybody else.
Well, in New Zealand, what they did is they used, but okay, guys, remember they're using a test that's not really testing for anything. They're just making it up as they go along. So they said they had no COVID. Of course they did. They didn't, or they did. It doesn't matter because they're making up as they go along. So then one person went to got his test done, a test that's not testing for it and just gives you a random answer anyway. And then he went to the gym and worked out, and then he realized that he got a text through saying he got it. He'd had it. The test was positive. He wasn't positive, by the way. And then they shut the country down.
The whole country for one case.
Yeah. For one guy. He went to the gym as well. It's not as if he was going to a strip bar, was it?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? He was trying to work out.
Bar. Yeah.
Mental. The whole country. And I'm like, I'm looking around. I mean, that is another Emperor's New Clothes moment. You're looking around going, what are you doing? But there are people are doing it, and that's why this has to be mass brainwashing, because it's so insane that people are going along with it. And everybody knows it's mental, and it will collapse eventually. Someone will go, the Emperor's got no clothes on. It's very, I think it's close, but again, actually could still go on for another year or two. I mean, what damage is going to be done in the meantime? And that's the race here, is that how much damage are you going to do in the meantime before this gets going? So these are the trivial demands, as you say, is getting up and changing your mask to go to the toilet and then putting it back on. People are hanging it on their car window and putting it on. It's been there for 3 weeks. You're supposed to, my partner's a dental nurse, senior dental nurse. Every time she does a procedure, she has to take the mask off, throw it away and get a new one. So you're wearing the same mask for 6 weeks. It's been hanging on your windshield, your knobhead. You might as well put your pants on your face. It's ridiculous. And again, it's ridiculous, but people are doing ridiculous stuff. And that's why we do the WhatApp podcast, because these things are so funny and so stupid that we really need to point them out, that they're funny and stupid, because they are. But it breaks your will down. And the last point on that is the unachievableness of it all. It's totally unachievable what they're trying to get you to do, guys. You can't have zero COVID, because they'll test you and it doesn't. It randomly gives you a positive or a negative, depending on how many cycles they do. You're not going to get zero. It's like saying zero flu. It's exactly the same as zero flu. Mm-hmm. It's trying to say zero head lice or zero coughing. It's so ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. They're giving you an unachievable aim and then laughing at you. And this is the real sad thing for me, is this cult and the Boris Johnsons of the world and even the Trumps of the world, although I think he tried to push back a little bit. Biden, although he doesn't know where he is. he clearly doesn't know where he is, does he? Harris, who's the real president at the moment. They are laughing at you because they're evil. They're psychopaths. You're dealing with a psychopath. And anyone tells me that you're not, you can't tell me they're not psychopaths. They would not be able to do and sleep at night knowing what they're doing. They don't have the empathy, the common sense that we do. And the one thing we have going for us is that they always overplay their hand, psychopaths, because they don't have that feeling of when to stop. The only problem is they overplayed their hand 6 months ago and people are still going along with it.
Yeah.
And that's what frightens me.
And they've done a good job, just that mass appeal to authority. And I think it's all come from, you know, just the dumbing down of us and the weakening of our intuition and our, you know, through public schools. And I think that's what's totally happened. You know, I think it probably wasn't quite as strong when I was around going to school, but I mean, it was still there. I had to break myself of the chains of like thinking that, you know, just because somebody's a governor of a state that they're a smart person or something like that, you know.
So well, people don't realize that this whole system is, the more corrupt you are, the higher up you'll go. That's the whole point in the system. Right. If you're a corrupt person, you'll get to be a multimillionaire. I mean, it's not usually through talent. I'm not saying that every multimillionaire is not. There's some very, very clever people. But if you're doing things like being billionaires and you're hanging out with the likes of Bill Gates and Elon Musk, you're probably not a very nice person. You're probably not. You really can't be. And because that's not the way the system works. It isn't. And that's why you get these poor kids going to the music industry and get abused and end up with drugs and kill themselves, because they've had to do things or see things or turn a blind eye to things that they never would have thought they would have to do. And that's what happens. It eats them alive. And this is what's happened to them. I mean, Joe Biden, I mean, clearly has a thick penchant for sniffing young girls' heads. We know that. And now he's stopped. He doesn't know where he is anymore. And that's sad in itself. So you listen, you think that how sick these people must be to put a man with later stage dementia on telly to read a prompter that he can't read, regardless of the guy's an absolute nasty piece of work was. But now he's a really, really old man with senile dementia and you're using him to get your way. How sick do you have to be? Imagine that was your granddad.
Yeah.
They're using your granddad with senile dementia on telly to push their policies. That's how sick and twisted these people are, because they're psychopaths. And people need to realize this. Forget Joe Biden. He's an ill, sick man with senile dementia. Look at the people that are propping him up. They're sick. They are sick. You're going to listen to those people, aren't you? And think they've got their best interest for you. You should not even be. These people need to be locked up. Them sort of people need to be kept away from society, from away from us. They're dangerous people. You give them positions of power because the bloodlines are giving them the positions of power and funding them. Then you're in trouble because they don't care. They're not able to care. They're broke. They're not human. They don't have that human part of us anymore. That's been broken in them, either through abuse, through indoctrination, been born into things like Bill Gates was born into a eugenics cult called Planned Parenthood. People don't even understand that. Like, what's that? It's a eugenics cult. His dad was head of Planned Parenthood. Microsoft was funded into existence by IBM. IBM created the technology for the Nazi war camps. It's all eugenicism. This is the Fourth Reich you're looking at. And I'm trying to tell people this, go, oh, that's mad. Yes, it's mad. I'm agreeing. It's mad. You're looking at eugenicists that want to, he openly tells you that he wants to lower the world population. What's an
through, through vaccines.
Through vaccines. He's not even he hiding it, guys.
He said it on a TED Talk, Deborah.
No, and I think it's such a big, the evil is so massive, people can't comprehend it. They can't go, oh, it just sounds mad. It is mad. It is mad. And you're the one putting your arm out. It is mad. Just today, AstraZeneca, I believe
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, it's the AstraZeneca one that 12 countries, 12 countries banned it.
I see Ireland banned it again today. Imagine you're one of them people that have had the AstraZeneca injection already, and now you're seeing that.
Yeah. Yeah, so in Oakland, California, in the parking lot of the Coliseum where the Oakland Raiders play, there's a huge tent city of where you go to get vaccinated. And I guess you just go online, you look up your name, and randomly it comes up, and they give you a number of what when you can go get the vaccination. Every person in the whole area, my friend was telling me about it. And they were given out the wrong dosage of, I guess it was less, which is probably a good thing.
Right.
But, you know, they never had to answer for it. Somebody had to blow the whistle on it for it to come out. They knew about it and they were just going to sweep it under the rug. And then the doctor's recommendations after that happened, the doctor that was in charge said, it's a shame, you know, it's a shame that this has happened. We totally support the people who got the wrong dosage. We support them to do the right, whatever's best for them. That was the advice that he gave.
That's not advice. That's an old shit. It's not advice, is it?
Yeah.
It's not advice. It's not going to help anyone.
And so that was a couple of weeks ago. I talked to him on the phone yesterday. He said every day he drives past it on the way home from work. It's horrible traffic on the 880 freeway. But he said it's still jam packed full of people. You know, nobody cares. No, word never got out. And even if the word had got out to everybody, they'd still be there.
I don't understand it. I can't even understand it. All I could think of is that people are so afraid of this. They want their life back. They're so desperate. And they don't value quality of life over quantity of life. They right. just want to live longer. Well, do you really want to live like this? Well, this is the start. This is 12 months in.
Yeah.
What is the quality of life going to be for your children? Forget about yourself. I mean, I don't want my child growing up in this. I'm done. I don't mind. I'd go today.
Yeah. If I was 72 years old and you said, okay, you can stay in your house for 3 years and die when you're 75 after staying in your house for 3 years, or you can go outside for a year and die after that. I mean, how is that even a choice? I'm taking another year and having a great time. And then I had a good life.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. And I've said this to me and David Icke, had this conversation. So there's people are scared of death.
Yeah. We had a talk on our last show about near-death experiences. And I think so many people have had such a cushioned, easy life and have never experienced being close to death that they're so fearful of it. And I think that at this point in the history of the world right now, there's probably the highest amount of people that have never had a near-death experience. I think, you know, you start going back in time, I think more and more and more percentage of the population have been closer to death a whole bunch of times, you know. It's like the people who, you know, your dad had to go build the Empire State Building so that he could buy some bread for the family, you know. So, like, just stuff like that. And I think our you know, it's a whole thing of hard times, you know, hard men, or like the whole thing, like hard times create, go to easy times, and easy times create soft men, and then soft men create hard times, and then hard men create easier times. And I think we've been in, you know, the last, you know, 50 years or so, we've been in the easiest of times, and it gets easier and easier physically, and people are just dependent on, you know, technology for everything, that you don't even have to get off your couch if you don't want to. Now you get everything brought to your door, and you don't even have to go to work if you don't want to. So
I know. Living is a doing thing. It's not a being thing.
Yeah.
You go out and live. People say, oh, I did this stuff, I felt so alive, because you were doing something. Living is a doing thing. If you can't do anything, you're not alive. You're just sitting there vegetating. It's ridiculous. And I think the psychology is messed up in a lot of people. I had myself had a few near-death experiences when I was born without an esophagus. So I had to get my esophagus placed, and I was in hospital in and out Grey Emerald Street for decades. Maybe that gave me a different feeling of it. I don't know. I've never been scared of death. I remember one of them specifically, seeing myself as like up, and I could see myself down. I don't know whether that had any, because I've never been scared of death. I've been scared of all sorts, mostly upsetting people, which I challenge myself to do regularly, because not purposely, but I know it's a thing that I worried about for a long time. So now it's like, I'm not going to worry about that. So the challenge, I'm trying to kind of harden that part of me to go, I don't care, because people take offense. They go around taking offense to things. I don't go out my way to offend people, but if someone's offended, they've taken that offense. That's on them, not on me. And then, so there's parts of you you need to kind of look at. And that's why the new podcast now, I'm trying to kind of offer solutions to things, because we can talk about the conspiracies, and I can tell you who's what and what's where, but really at the end of the day, how is that affecting you as a person, and what are you going to do about it in your life, and how are you going to make yourself feel better and behave in a different way and become the person that you want in the environment that's already been set? Because you can't do anything about this at the moment. It will, I think they'll punch themselves out like a rope-a-dope. I think that's what the O'Ally thing, and we put our fists up on the rope, and we've done this for 12 months, and I think they've knackered themselves out, and I think we're ready to come back now. But in the meantime, how are you going to cope, and how are you going to feel, and how are you going to be around people that you love that are going along with this? They're the important questions right now, I believe.
Okay, so let's take it out on a white pill moment. For the last part of the show, so we're getting woken up. Everybody knows what's going on. Then we know the Bitterman scale that's being used on Bitterman's chart that's being used on us. What do we do? What's the solutions? What can we do as individuals, as small groups, to get through this better? To wake as many people up? To figure out who can be woken up and who can't? What do we do?
I think the thing I've been trying to do is change the things I put into my head. So I've been reading a lot more, like this book, David Goggins' book, that book. Oh. I've been reading a lot more stuff like this. I've been trying to change the way I see myself and see the world. I've been trying to communicate people in a different way, not tell them about the conspiracies, but like, how are you doing? How are you coping? This is a bit mental, isn't it? Using a lot of comedy as well, because this stuff is weird and people will turn away from it. So I think if you're approaching people that don't understand this stuff, maybe not go in, don't go in straight into the reptilian stuff. Maybe go in like softly and go, it's a bit weird that you got to wear the mask. Well, you don't have to wear it in here, mate. You can if you want to. Don't be more human. Just keep. Yeah, I suppose that's the way. Just be as human as you can with people.
That's the first thing I say to when workmen come, or like say the exterminator comes to my house once a month. We just had the wood floors refinishing our upstairs. The workmen come in and they got masks on. First thing I say is like, you don't have to wear that lame shit in here, man. And they all take it off.
Yeah, exactly. And it's ridiculous. And it's good for you. And they probably really appreciate you saying that. And eventually that will break through. So I suppose connect with people on a human level. If they want to do these things, then you can say, like, I know this about that. I'm not going to do it. And here's my reasons, but I fully respect yours. And I suppose, I don't know, you can only really do something for yourself. I spent a long time trying to tell the world about conspiracies, or the world, not that the world's listening, but I'm telling people about conspiracies all the time. And you realize that actually most people aren't ready to hear about the deep, dark levels of the bloodline families and the Rothschilds and the Merovingian families and how they go back to the Anunnaki and all. They're not ready for all of that. They don't need all that either right now. I mean, what they've got enough in their heads, but what you do probably need is like, honestly, you don't need to wear the mask around here. It's really not as bad as you think it is. And then you possibly broach the fact the PCR test doesn't really do what you're meant to do, and the vaccines are a bit experimental. You might want to look into them and advise them not to watch the mainstream media all the time, because what you're putting in your head is shaping your view of the world. And then have a cup of tea or a beer and have a hug and go, this is madness, isn't it? Mad. absolutely mad. And then maybe just leave that with them, because I suppose you're going to push them away, and that's what they want. These bloodlines, they want us all to argue amongst each other, tell each other what to do, try and force each other into doing this and doing that. And also remember, this is only a blip in the time. Yep. So we've been in here for billions of years, for God's sake. This will pass. This will pass. But who are you going to become through it? Maybe see it as an opportunity, like Iconic. We see this as a massive opportunity to build something. People need to hear this information, want to hear this information. They want to laugh at this stuff. They want to feel like they're not alone. So for me, it's a massive opportunity. And that's what we as human beings are very, very resilient at. We're able to turn things around in the blink of an eye. You can change your mind in a blink of an eye, going, I'm going to see this different now. I'm not going to do this. This isn't working. I'm going to see this different. This is my opportunity to do this. It's my opportunity to do that. I can change the way I react to this situation, and that's it. And I know it sounds very self-helpy, but you're only going to look after yourself. The rest of it, you can't do anyway. And that comes back to their whole, you need to look after people's health, other people's health. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. No, you don't. There's a vast difference between going around giving people a disease that's going to kill them knowing you've got one, than giving something that might harm someone in 2% of the time accidentally on a bus somewhere. That's ridiculous. That's not life. We'll get hit by that bus eventually, especially if you've got a mask on, you might not be able to see it. Take responsibility for yourself, and you don't have no responsibility for anyone else. You really don't. And neither should they ask that of you either. They shouldn't ask that of you. And don't let them repackage your human rights as privileges. You do not need to earn your human rights. They're God-given, whether you believe in God or not, or they're human given. They're there from day one to the day end, and they are yours, and they are not for you to be sold or earned. They are yours individually. Do not let people trash all over your boundaries. Have some self-respect. Someone's been an asshole to you, fuck off, go away.
What do you think, Deborah?
Grand advice.
Yeah. So if we can just find a way to be in all this madness, to be the kindest version, kindest, most caring, compassionate versions of anti-masker, anti-vaxxer as possible. And just, I think, if you do this long enough, you start getting the feel. You can feel people out before you even talk to them, what you can and can't say. But everybody can, not everybody, but you can get a little wedge in with some people. And you got to just work on trying to find out who those people are. And that's who you got to spend your time with.
Be kind to yourself, though. That's the first one.
Okay.
Be kind to yourself. Not other people, just you. If someone is pushing it on you, just walk away from them. Don't push it on them either, but protect yourself as well. Just to look after you. And that's what we're not doing. We're not looking after ourselves. So be kind to yourself. Just, I don't want to be around these people. I don't want to speak to these people if they're going to be like that. I don't want to put my stuff on them. And if they're forcing a mask on me, walk away from them. You don't need anyone else in this planet. You should be able to sit in a room on your own and go, I'm all right. This is mental. And that is the only thing you can do. So just be kind to yourself. Protect yourself. There's some evil bastards out there. And we're listening to them. And they will abuse you. You have a right to defend yourself from this stuff.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think that's a good place to stop it. Richard, I want to thank you so much. This was awesome. I'm a huge fan of the show. And will you tell everybody where they can find you and how to support everything that you guys do over there at Iconic?
Well, thank you for asking me as well. I really appreciate it. I don't get interviewed very often, so it's lovely. I do really appreciate it. And it's lovely to meet you both. And I'd love you to have you both on my show as well. So whenever you're free, we'll do a reversal of this as well.
Hit us up. We got nothing going on.
Yeah, same here. I'm sitting in my conservatory. You can see my work at glitchingthecode.co.uk, and you'll find all the links there. Obviously a YouTube, Glitching the Code. If you put WTAF, WTAF in with Gareth Ike, that's the comedy one we do. People seem to like that. It's like a chat with their mates down the pub. And obviously everything on iconic.com. You've got all my documentaries on there, all my films on there. Currently working on a film with a lot of alternative media researchers called War of the Words, which is about social media censorship. And that's coming out in May. So iconic.com is most of my stuff's on there, but if not, glitchingthecode.co.uk, you'll find me there. And I think it's Rich @RichWillett2 on Twitter because I got chucked off and I had to go back on again. Perfect. Recently.
Yeah, that's great. And thank you. Yeah, tell the Ikes we said what's up, put in the good word for us, and we will talk to you down the road and hopefully at a happier, more fruitful, better time. But we'll see. We're going to make it through this, okay?
Indeed.
All right, Deborah.
Thank you so much.
I love you, Deborah. Thanks for being a good sport. I know I held you to the fire a little bit more on this episode. So
that's okay.
More of that is coming. So, all right, guys.
Oh, I might have to walk away and just go sit in a room by myself.
Okay, go do that now.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See you later.